Hey, welcome to Throwback Thursday. I'm John St. Augustine and the Life 2.0 podcast. Always delighted, nearly beyond words, but if it was beyond words, you wouldn't be hearing anything, and who wants to do that? But nearly beyond words, delighted to have you with me one more time. This is the third run-through of this podcast, so I'm taping this much later than usual. This is 6 o'clock on a Wednesday evening, and twice earlier today, I was going to throw up the Wednesday rant. Huh, no pun intended. I was not going to barf it up, but you get my drift. And what happens when I do these shows for the most part is that something will trip my trigger. You know, I got it in my mind. I want to do a Wednesday show, a Saturday show, a Monday thing. You know, I kind of got that in my head. But I never know what I'm going to talk about, ever. Never, ever, ever. And something will trip my trigger, and I'm like off to the races. So today, it was George Bush's funeral. President Bush was going to be laid to rest, and they had the whole ceremony there and like that. And a million things were going through my mind as I watched the president's row all sitting there from Carter all the way to the current POTUS and everybody in between and how it all plays itself out. And, you know, to a person, everybody talked about what a great guy that President Bush had been and, you know, the things that he accomplished and all kind of stuff. And, you know, that the barriers come down and politics shouldn't be the deciding factor. And, you know, well, I say that shit all the time. What I've been saying for years is absolutely true. I've never seen Democrat or Republican on a headstone. I guarantee you when they put him into the ground next to Mrs. Bush and their daughter Robin, it's not going to say Republican on it. And I've never seen it on a headstone. And I always am fascinated how much we make this the deciding and dividing factor in our lives while we're alive. And we're dead, nobody gives a shit. So that was in my mind. And I had about a 15-minute rant on that and other things that were going on. And then I had to stop and think, no, that's not good. I'm not going to use that. And then a little bit later, I happen to catch the news, which I rarely do because it's not good for your health. And this whole Robert Mueller investigation popped up and what was going on and who knew what when. And God, you know, it's just like an ongoing reality show. I mean, life is, we have a hard time discerning what reality is anyway. And all that's going on with this, it's like this is the ultimate pay-per-view. We're just paying for it in ways we really shouldn't be. And I ranted on that for about 18 minutes. And I thought, nah, that's not it. And part of it was is the design of the show, I want to take higher ground as much as possible. It's not always easy to do. Sometimes, look, I come from a bare-knuckle kind of growing up neighborhood guy, and I don't mind mixing up with the rest of them and the best of them. I just really, at this point in my life, try to make every attempt to you know, find some redeeming things in life and talk about that. And I'm not always successful. So I dumped that one. I'm like, I'm not going to do that either. So I sat all afternoon. And I thought, you know, I want to put up something. It's too late for Wednesday rant. So I need to do Throwback Thursday. And this is a Throwback Thursday edition for the subscribers. And listen, I'm in a rare mood. I never tape this late in the day. I'm up in the morning. Coffee, get going. I'm raring to go. Everything. I'm not feeling like that tonight. But I need to get this done and get this out of my mind. And so what I want to do is get Throwback Thursday set up and ready to go. And I decided the only way to do that was to run my fingers, you know, like through the files and see what I stopped at. And whatever show, whatever cassette or CD I stopped on is what I was going to talk about, or at least put up for Throwback Thursday. So get this. It's 6:07. It's 18:07 hours tonight on Wednesday. You're hearing this on Thursday or later as a subscriber. And I've already gone through two iterations of the Wednesday rant, so you're ending up with something I picked out of a stack. Not much. I could kind of pull that planning off at WGN or other places I've been, but it's my podcast. We'll go with the flow. So my fingers stopped, pulled out this CD in the deck, and it was from May of 2009. Darius Rucker, the former lead man of Hootie and the Blowfish, who's become pretty much an important solo star in his own right. We would try to hook some of the Oprah TV guests to come over and do radio, which was a new venture. Even though by this time we were 3 years into it, we didn't have a whole lot of cooperation from the kids across the street. So, matter of fact, I remember this specific episode, my significant other, Teresa, went across the street, like literally dragged Darius Rucker. It's like, you got to do John's show. It's the best show. Okay, great. It's from 2009. It's my conversation with Darius Rucker. But before that, because I'm going to play this thing in its entirety as we're throwing back Thursday. Before that, the open, I was cracking up. And the reason I was cracking up is because I tell this story about, and you're going to hear it in a minute. I don't want to give the whole thing away. But You know, Dr. Oz is a good buddy of mine, health fanatic, and he should be because he's Dr. Oz. He can't be overweight. You know, he can't. He's got to toe the line. And when we ever go out there to New York to work, I'd usually stay at Mehmet and Lisa's house, and we never ate. I mean, we ate stuff like Gladiator chili. I don't know where they came up with this stuff. It's nothing I would ever eat if I wasn't staying with them. It was astonishing. And, you know, I lost weight and stuff, but still, it didn't taste that good. So this one night, I'll tell the story. You're going to hear it in a second. This one night, I got in real late, flew in from Chicago. We had a long day of taping coming up the next day. So, you know, I came in late. I'm walking in the back of the house. And one of the kids, I can't remember who it was in the clip. I think it was Daphne Oz, before she was a big deal on television. Says, oh, mom left dinner out for you. So I came in the back door. And there was this fish she left on this plate. Somewhere on my old phone, if I could find it, I would pull it off. It's this fish, like, it's like a prehistoric, like a coelacanth or something. This old fish, just, that was it. It was a fish and a fork and a knife. There was nothing else but this fish. I'm like, what is this? And it was just a really odd, interesting experience. And it, like, the fish came out of the Hudson River or something, the Benzini fish, or I don't know what the hell it was. So I've never listened to these shows ever. You know, did them in 2009. They aired. I didn't listen to my own stuff back then, still don't now. And just the story of that fish really cracked me up. So that's what you're going to hear. It's Throwback Thursday. You're going to hear this show in its entirety. And so enjoy this. This is from May of 2009 with Darius Rucker.
1 minute for better you and your financial fitness. Here's Gene Chachki on Oprah Radio.
Whether we're doing it on Facebook or MySpace or LinkedIn or Twitter, we're just looking to reach out to that person next to us and say, you matter and I matter and let's be there. The research shows that this is something that we need to do for our job security as well. Kind of a lifeline. It's definitely a safety net, because if something goes wrong in your work life, you need to be able to reach out. We make these connections. We cast a wide net.
This has been your 1 minute life lesson. Tune in every hour at the top of the hour for more ideas to help you live your best life, health, wealth, and happiness. This is Oprah Radio. Now, around every corner is an opportunity to learn, to grow, and get better. Are you ready to make the leap from where you are to where you really want to be? Here's John St. Augustine on Oprah Radio.
Good Saturday morning to you, and yes, even you. Thank you, Ms. Chatsky. Thank you, Ms. Winfrey, two of my favorite women on the planet. Little warm-up and introduction there. Glad to have you with me this morning. This is John St. Augustine on Oprah Radio, XM 156, and, of course, Sirius 195. So I've had a heck of a week. I don't know about you, but I've had a heck of a week. You know, I had the opportunity to go to New York, and whenever I go to New York, I think, why am I going to New York? Because I don't like New York. And I've said this before, there's nothing new here. And if you all want to send nasty emails from New York, you're going to have to convince me that, A, the hot dogs you have are better than the ones we have in Chicago. No. The pizza that you have in New York is better than Chicago pizza. No. And the taxi drivers are basically out to take my life. But all that aside, the rest of it I can live with. I just don't know why there isn't an alley on the island. You would think there'd be a better place to put the garbage than like on somebody's lawn. Anyway, that's just me. But I was out there this last week with Dr. Oz and the lovely and talented Lisa Oz. And I got to tell you about this fish, because if you listen to the Dr. Oz show, you know that he is obviously a very healthy eater. And all of that, if not most of that, comes from Lisa's offerings and dinners and things like that, and staying on his backside about what he eats and what he doesn't eat. And I've been out to eat with Mehmet many times, and he eats like he tells you to eat and tells me to eat. And he is an influence. There's no doubt. I've lost a lot of weight listening to what he has to say and trying to eat a little bit different. So anyway, all that being aside, I get to the Oz residence very late, relatively very late, because we had a taping early the next day. And there's nobody at the front door. I'm ringing the doorbell and ringing the doorbell. Nobody's answering the door. I'm thinking, they know I'm coming. And you know, this has happened to me before. I don't know if I ever said in this show, but a couple summers ago, I went out to stay with the Oz's, and I'm ringing the doorbell and ringing the doorbell. Nobody answers. And finally, Mehmet comes to the door, and he's got no shirt on, and he's all sweaty. And he opens the door, and I said, hey, what's up? And he goes, you're late. And he slams the door in my face. And then he opens the door back up again, gives me a hug, and says, you know, welcome, come on in. Well, it turns out he was in the back laying sod. And the guy is laying sod in the same surgical position that he opens up people's chests and saves their lives. I kid you not. So anyway, nobody's opening the door. So I walk around the back of the Oz house, and here is Mehmet's daughter, Daphne, coming out. And she said, oh, hey, how you doing? Come on in. Mom put dinner out for you, and you'll enjoy it. And I said, great. So I walk in, and what do I find sitting on this table but this giant fish that the head's still on it, and the head and the tail, the fish is so big that it's hanging off both sides of this plate. And I just, there's nobody downstairs. The lights are on, you know, the dog's running around doing his thing. The fish tank's doing its thing. And here is this very large dinner table with a plate with a fish on it. And I didn't know what to do, whether I should mount it or eat it. But on the side was some nice asparagus, and I saw some sweet potatoes, and I got a glass of water, and I thought, well, I'll sit down and eat the fish. Most of the time, where I live in Upper Michigan, we eat walleye and, you know, sport game type fish. I've never seen a fish like this. I thought it was some, you know, the Ozes live right on the Hudson River. I thought Mehmet had gone out and caught the fish, you know, gutted it just for me and put it on this plate. I'd never seen a fish like this. So I peel it back and I'm eating it. And it's a little different than most fish. It was more oily and fishy and globular and fatty and those type of things. So I eat this fish and then I eat the asparagus, which was terrific. And I go to take the fish, put the fish on the counter, and I pick up the tail of the fish, and, like, the head falls off. So, like, you know, what am I doing in New York? You know, what's going on? So anyway, we talked that night. The next morning, I was talking about this fish. Well, it's called, like, a benzini or tetrazini or some kind of zini thing. And everybody knew about this fish. I called Jean Chatsky the next day, and I said, Jean, here's what happened. And she goes, you had the benzini fish? I'm like, what the hell's a benzini fish? So as close as I could get, it was like some sort of mackerel or something. And anyway, it was very delicious. And I don't mean to make light of, you know, Lisa's hospitality, but it was just so funny. I actually took a picture of it, and I brought it back to Harpo, and I said, look at the fish that they put on my plate. I'd never been at a place where the fish head and tail hung off the sides of the plate. That is a giant fish. So my omega-3s went up by about 4,000% that night. Anyway, speaking of things going up by a lot of percentage, I'm very excited about the show today because I have the chance to go from one fish to a different fish. So we're going from the fish at the Oz's house to Hootie and the Blowfish. Very excited about today's show. I have an opportunity in just a few minutes to sit down with Darius Rucker, who is the front man for Hootie and the Blowfish. You know, this guy's got an incredible voice, and, you know, he seems to be very humble to me, very appreciative of the success that has been bestowed upon him. And I really, you know, anybody who uses their voice that way to reach so many people has my attention. So anyway, that's all ahead. I'm John St. Augustine on Oprah Radio, XM 156 and Sirius 195. Back at it on Oprah Radio, XM 156 and Sirius 195. You know, it's one thing to be, I guess you could say, almost a legendary voice in pop music and crossing over to rock and roll in some points, but it's another thing to have your first country album debut at number one on the Billboard charts. That's a really big deal. And the voice, of course, you know, is Darius Rucker, and I have the opportunity to sit down with him a little bit today on Oprah Radio, and so glad to have you in the studio, sir.
Thanks for talking to me, man. How are you?
Thanks for talking. You're thanking me?
Absolutely.
I want to take your voice and put it in my body and then do all my shows and do voiceover for 20 years. The song, of course, was Don't Think I Don't Think About It. It's from his new album, Learn to Live. And, you know, you've had quite a journey. A lot of people, of course, know the work with Hootie and the Blowfish over the years. And it became almost a phenomenon, what you guys did and how big the records were and all the work you did in radio. And then there's kind of this other platform that showed up. But to you, it's not such a stretch to country music, is it?
No, I didn't think I was doing anything that was that far or that different. Mm-hmm. I thought I was just, I always thought Hootie was pretty close to being a country band without, if we had just made a couple turns, we would have been a good country band. But I thought I was just, I've always been the kind of singer who just sings whatever the music makes me feel. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it was rock and roll songs or country or Frank Sinatra, I just mm-hmm. sing what, and so when I was
now
in the
studio. I'd like to hear. I'd like to hear you do an album of Frank Sinatra.
Well,
I don't know
if I'll ever do an album, but I do it for charity probably once a year. Probably once a year for charity. I have a big mm-hmm. band down in Charleston, South Carolina.
Really?
And I do a whole Sinatra set.
Is that right? Yeah. You do the whole get up in the...
Oh, I'm in a, is I that got right? my tuxedo and everything.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah. You know, a lot of people know that there are crossover artists. Sheryl Crow, of course, and Kid Rock has done his thing, and Uncle Cracker. And Jimmy Buffett does it both ways. It's astonishing. When people call you crossover, I know what you're talking about. You know, when I ask people what kind of music Elvis sings, well, he sings music, everything.
Sure.
Is it hard for you to be in those labels and work within those parameters?
Yeah, it's hard because you don't want to. But but everybody puts those, you know, it's there for everybody. You know, you're either country or you're pop or you're rock or you're this and that. And when I came over to the countryside, I was really worried that coming from the pop thing was really going to be, you know, a hindrance for me. Mm-hmm. It was really going to keep people from giving me a shot. And, you know, I'm glad that didn't happen.
Yeah. I know that you co-wrote that song, didn't you, the first
yeah,
time?
Yeah, I sure did.
That's not out of the range for you to be able to do that. But what's it like? I'm sitting in the studio with you, and you wrote that song how long ago? And to sit here now and hear that, what's that like?
Oh, it's crazy. That's so funny that you said that, because I was driving in the car yesterday, and It Won't Be Like This For Long came on, and I was just listening to it, and I was just thinking back to the writing session and everything. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wrote like 50 songs for this record. And
50?
Yeah, like 50 songs.
And they allowed how many?
I think 11 like made the record. Yeah, right. 12 were on the record. Yeah. And so it was like, thinking back to that session, I thought it was a cool song, but I remember thinking that all the songs were cool when we were done, you know?
Yeah.
And for it to actually be, to have been a number one song was crazy. That's just crazy.
Well, I mean, you don't set out to do that. But did you have an inkling, is your little gut tell you inside, once you pen that and you kind of hear it in the studio after a couple times, you think this got possibility?
I thought, especially after we recorded it, not so much after we wrote it, but after we recorded it, I thought this song could really be the first thing, because it just seemed so relatable, but it was country enough. It was country. You couldn't say it wasn't country, but it wasn't so country that you'd say I was trying too hard. You know, and it was, I thought it'd do something, and we went round and round. And the funny thing is, after we put it around, the president of the label calls me up and said, I guess we could have put this out 3 months before. I was like, yeah, we could.
You know, it's definitely got the country riffs and the country feel to it. And obviously, if you thought you had something there, maybe you're not too surprised when the country aficionados grab onto it so quick. Did that surprise you at all? That the fans went, wow.
I wasn't surprised that the fans liked it. I was surprised that country radio gave it a shot as easy as it did. Because we went to some places early on where we didn't know what the deal was. And, you know, the great thing about the Texas, being a Texas musician, is Texas's own world. They have, you know, they have their own likes and dislikes in their country music. And, you know, and so we didn't know what was going to happen with me in Texas. Mm-hmm. And San Antonio was one of the first places to play. And they're still one of my biggest supporters. And it was crazy for me to see that happening all over the country, because I didn't know what was going to happen. I had seen what was happening, you know, with a lot of folks that were trying to do the same thing I was doing. So that was funny to watch. And I still, to me now, when I see the guys who are my friends who are program directors and stuff, I just laugh. I just go, man, I just thought you guys were going to hate me.
Be one cut and that'd be the end
of it. Yeah, you know, exactly.
If you're catching us late on Oprah Radio, I'm sitting with Darius Rucker. It's John St. Augustine on XM 156 and Sirius 195. You know, I get this sense about you that you are really excited about this phase of your career. You seem like a kid who got out of school early.
Wow, it's so funny that you see that.
It's the second time I've done things twice.
Yeah.
This is how you feel.
I am so amazingly over the top for the opportunity that's been given to me for country music. Because I was going to make this record just as something to do for myself. I didn't think I could get a record deal.
What do you mean do for yourself? You're going to give it out at Christmas for a gift?
I was going to maybe sell it on the internet.
Really?
Yeah, I was just going to do it on my own. And I told Doc, our manager, I said, Doc, I'm going to make a country record. And he said, well, you know, this was before he moved to Nashville when he was still in LA. He was like, you know, we'll see, whatever. And we talked about it. And we even said to each other that we didn't think I could get a record deal. I told him, I said, I'm not looking for a deal. I don't think I can get one. He's like, me neither. Like,
well, thanks for the confidence.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, we could have got an indie deal, we thought, but we didn't, you know, I was going to do it on my own. And when Capital came along, it would just changed everything.
I mean, you look like you're in disbelief still.
You're saying, I'm sitting here, man, I'm about to go to Oprah.
Yeah, I hear you.
You know,
there's something, huh?
Dude.
You're also going to be joined by Kenny Chesney, Carrie Underwood, and Sugarland, because they're doing a big show that everybody has just seen, talking about the Country Music Association. Man, you got tears in your eyes, brother.
This is crazy, dude. I'm about to do Oprah.
Wow.
It's crazy, man.
It tends to do that to people.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
This is crazy.
But you earned it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you know, you earn it and everything, but you just, you know, you don't think it's ever going to come.
Something.
It's something.
All right. Don't get me started. All right? I can't do that. Let's talk about, here's what's always interesting to me. Longfellow, the great poet, said that the human voice is the organ of the soul.
Yes. Oh, and, yeah, I've heard that.
Yes. And when I hear you sing and when I hear you open those pipes and you do this, there's a vibration to that. It comes from another place inside you. Do you just kind of get out of the way and let it go, or is it something you got to work at?
Oh, absolutely. Like, I've never been taught, I've never taken a voice lesson or anything. Really? I don't know how to sing. I just do it.
It's true they found you singing in the shower, right? That's how it all started.
Yeah, Mark Bryan, my guitar player, he was a freshman, I was a sophomore, and I was singing in the shower, and I walked out, and he said, "Hey, man, you can sing. I can play guitar." I was like, "Yeah, let's jam together. Let's see if we know any songs." And that's where we started the band.
And now you're on Oprah.
Yeah, exactly. But singing for me is like talking. It's like walking. It's like waking up in the morning. It's just what I'm supposed to do.
Mm-hmm. When you sit down and you know that you have that gift, how humbling is it to say, I didn't take vocal lessons. I was singing in the shower. Somebody plucked me from obscurity. You had a big hit with, obviously, Only Want to Be With You with Hootie and the Blowfish. And now this whole other platform comes up. What else do you think is important that you lend your voice to that maybe we don't know about?
The things that I do, like the voiceovers or the things I do for charities and stuff, it's just, you know, that's not stuff I don't even want to talk about. It's just stuff I do because it's something I believe in or whatever. Mm-hmm. I do whatever I believe in. You know, if I believe in something and somebody asks me to do it, I'm more than happy to do it.
Does anybody else in your family have this voice, or just you?
My mom and my dad.
Is that right?
Yeah, my mom was her voice was much better than mine. Mm-hmm. And my dad left. Well, he didn't leave before I was born. He was just never around. And the only time I got to hear my dad was every Sunday morning. He sang with a band called the Rolling Stones. They were a gospel group.
Really?
Yeah.
And Rolling Stones before the Rolling Stones?
No, I don't know. They're big.
They got away with it.
Their big thing was Rolling Stones Gather No Moss. That was their big thing. Yeah, they got away with it. They were just a local gospel group, you know, and they'd get out. How I heard him was every Sunday morning. He could really sing.
You know, I was sitting here. Obviously, I know your work from Hootie and the Blowfish, and I've listened to your country music songs, and I've been hearing your voice, and I kind of tracked over the years what people do and how they do it. And I go to your site, and I can look about your bio and all that kind of stuff, and I just kind of push that off to the side because I know that people write that from a perspective that is almost singular. They see you a certain way that write about your bio. But when you look back as a kid and you go back to when you were growing up and you get this smile on your face that you got now, do you pinch yourself every other day or is it every day when you say, not only have I been given this voice, but I get to put it out in the world and people respond to it? I mean, is there a responsibility that comes with that?
Yeah. And I mean, it kills me every day. The questions you're asking are great because the other day I'm playing a show in Minnesota and I'm on stage and I'm playing and I just start smiling. And I'm looking out in the crowd, I'm smiling, and I'm thinking, I play music for a living.
Yeah.
You know, that's crazy. All these people are just, you know, 3,000 people in this little theater, and they're all standing up having a great time, and they're all there to see me. Yeah. And this is what I'm doing for a living. This is how I'm feeding my family.
Well, what I was going to say before is every time I've ever seen you perform on television, what it may be, you have this air about you that this is the best game going, and you were dropped off on the planet at the right time.
Oh, yeah. This is all, all of this, everything that happened with Hootie, all of it. You know, we're from South Carolina. Mm-hmm. I'm just a kid from South Carolina, from Charleston, South Carolina, who found three guys that wanted to play. Mm-hmm. You know, you never think.
Good thing you were taking a shower that day. Huh?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, really.
Exactly.
When you think
and you think you're going to make it, but you know, really, you know, you don't think you're going to make it. You're from South Carolina playing the scene. You know, big deal.
Yeah.
And to be here is pretty unbelievable.
Tell me about your musical influences. Whose voices did you hear? Whose music moved you?
Growing up, it was Al Green. Al Green, and then some more Al Green.
You can do some Al Green? You ever tried to do Al
Green? Actually, I did a record a while back where I did an Al Green cover.
Is that right?
That was really cool, yeah. But Al Green was, even like when I started, even the thing that was great for me as a kid, my mom let me listen to whatever I want. Mm-hmm. And so I was an AM radio kid. And I lived in South Carolina in the early 70s. You could hear Stevie Wonder and, you know, Joan Baez. Mm-hmm. And
so you got all of it.
Yeah, and you could hear Buck Owens on the same station. And you're
listening
just flipping
to
through.
Listening to
all that. And so I listened to everything. And my mom was always great. Even through all the years, through the, you know, Kiss years and everything that I went through, she let me listen to whatever I want.
You listen to Kiss?
Yeah, Kiss.
Is that right?
They were huge for me.
Yeah. They were huge for you. They were huge. I would love to see you sit down with Gene Simmons and jam.
I've sat down with Gene. We haven't jammed, right? But we're managed by the same guy.
Is that right? Yeah. I bet those are some conversations.
Gene's awesome.
Yeah, he is.
He's like, awesome.
He's quite the guy. So those are the influences you have. What do you think about, you've been around, I wouldn't say a long time, but you're seasoned. You've done the scene. You've been at the top. You've been at the bottom, everywhere in between. What do you think about the state of music today? What is it that it may be lacking, or is there we don't hear?
The sad part about music for me is to see how much rock is not involved in the pop world of music anymore. You know, rock and roll used to be king. You know, now you look at the top 10 songs played, and there's one song by Nickelback or U2 and the rest are, you know, R&B. I mean, I love hip-hop and R&B and everything, but rock and roll, you still have your AAA stations and AC stations, but rock and roll just seems to be dying. Where's that band that, you know?
It'd be nice if somebody actually picked up an instrument at some point, wouldn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. You know, but, and of course, the way people are getting music. You know, I mean, it's so easy to get it off the internet. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's a guy who's... As a person, if I don't think as a musician, it's hard for me to get mad at that guy when you can buy a CD and put it on your iTunes and you can give it to me and I can put it on my iTunes and it sounds just as good.
Right.
It's hard for me to be mad at that guy, even though, that's taking a lot of money out of my pocket.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard to be mad at that guy.
Yeah, yeah. I think that the way things go, you know, everything comes and goes in waves and you never know what's going to hit and what's not going to hit. But I am always fascinated by what music does for people. There's a real healing power when it comes into music. And everybody has their own thing. You can listen to Kiss all day and it's just exactly what you need. Or you can listen to Vince Gill all day and that's what you need. Or you can listen to Darius Rucker all day or Joan Baez. And it's always interesting to me how people find certain things and they find them and kind of they meet in the middle. So, and you're on the road and you're having a tough day. If you're not singing to yourself, is it Brad Paisley that's in your ear? Who are you listening to?
I'm a song guy, and I just get songs I love. And right now, my it song is More Like Her by Miranda Lambert. It's my it song. I on the road, I bet I listen to it 10 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a warm up CD that I listen to every day. And Brad Paisley's Letter to Me is one of my favorite songs
mm-hmm,
ever.
Mm-hmm.
Rascal Flatts, Take Me There, I listen to a lot. Carrie Underwood,
yeah,
Last Name,
yeah.
All American Girl. Those are songs. I remember when Last Name came out, I was so mad. I mean, I'm riding in the car with my wife, and Last Name comes on, and I hear it for the first time. And I get really mad because I didn't want my All-American Girl to be that easy. I was so into that song. I was like, I can't believe she's going to put this song out.
Oh, my God.
And then, of course, four listens later, it's my favorite song on the radio, you know. But, you know, and that's why I just go by. It's really things on the radio I hear, and if I love it, I go and I buy it, and I just listen to it over and over. Mm-hmm. I'm that kind of guy, and I know every syllable, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Every time she breathes, I breathe along. Yeah.
One of the song we're going to go out with here in just a minute or two is called It Won't Be Like This for Long. When I heard that the first time as a father of a 20-year-old daughter and an 18-year-old son who still allows me to hug him, that really hit me because the dash we live our lives is very, very short. Where'd that come from for you?
Me and these two guys that were writing, we were talking about our kids a lot that day. And so we decided we were going to write a lullaby for our kids. And we wrote that. And the thing that was crazy for me about that song is when we finished writing it and recording it, I thought it was just a cool album track and everything would be a single.
Mm-hmm.
And we go out and I'm doing a radio tour and I'm playing in conference rooms, you know, radio conference rooms around the country. And we play the very first one and four guys and two women are crying. And I mean like bawling.
Mm.
And so I was like, wow, that's crazy. And everywhere we went, people cried. And I thought that song is just, I didn't get it. Now I get it.
Now you get it. Now I get it. No doubt. Listen, Darius, it's been great to have you with us today at Oprah Radio. I appreciate not only you stopping by, but that you're lending the organ of the soul, the human voice, to country music in such a fine way. It's a great treat to have you.
Oh, thanks for having me. He didn't have to wake up, even up all night, lying there in bed listening to his newborn baby cry. He makes a pot of coffee and splashes water on his face. His wife gives him a kiss and says it's gonna be okay. It won't be like this for long. One day we'll look back laughing at the week we brought her home. This phase is gonna fly by, so baby, just hold on.
It won't be like this for long.
So thanks for spending a little bit of time on the Life 2.0 TBT podcast today. I want to thank you again for being a subscriber and supporting the work and spreading the word. Until next time, safe travels. Adios.